Good evening. James McKenna here with my Science Hour. This is for June 13th, 2019. And some listeners have written in, asked some questions, so I'm going to start with those. Lots of topics to cover tonight. So let me quick pull this up. This is from a listener. It says, I have two small requests, but from an uninformed listener. Well, none of my listeners are truly uninformed. The question says, sometime when it fits, please explain how often and to what degree the Earth has experienced an actual physical pole shift. And just to be clear, there are two types of pole shifts. In fact, we should actually find a different name. There's the physical pole shift where the axis of the Earth actually changes, the surface of the Earth, rotational rate, and potentially the orbit of the Earth also changes at the same time because of a large passing object. And then there's the magnetic pole shift, which is actually happening all the time. We have complete pole reversals due to the solar wind of our magnetic field on a continual basis. But the magnetic north of the Earth is moving on a continual basis, even without the solar wind additional factor in our magnetic field. But the I talk about that in a lot of my work. But getting back to this idea of a physical pole shift, these are very much related to the mass extinctions that Earth has experienced. And if you look up in, you know, just look up mass extinctions of Earth and go back, you'll find that they've happened within the last few hundred million years. And that's allegedly where the Earth has developed into this bountiful living entity that we see today. But by the way, I don't believe dating. It's one of the most questionable areas of science that you could find. So when people say, oh, such and such happened 66 million years ago, I'd take it with a real, real big grain of salt. But anyway, pole shift is where the actual physical poles of the Earth change, either the rotational rate or the position of the pole or both. And so we know that there was a mass extinction on Earth within the last 10,000 years. This is when the woolly mammoths and the mastodons, the saber-toothed tiger, and a whole host of other large animals went under. And at that point, the human race, well, we don't have a lot of information because science does not allow us to have a lot of information that's really not studied very extensively. But it is very clear that there was a pole shift within the last 10,000 years. So, officially, if you look mass extinctions, if you go to any source on the internet or in textbooks, they'll tell you there were five major mass extinctions on the planet. Well, that does not include the one that happened in the last 10,000 years because they don't want to talk about that. That is just completely obfuscated, completely hidden from modern so-called knowledge. But then let's look at another factor that's visible, and that is mountain building. And of course, the idea that mountains are built through plate tectonic movement is ludicrous. I mean, the physics of this, I've talked about this in my programming, etc., that the idea that continental plates move sideways and push against each other and then create mountains is absolutely absurd. Simple reason is because of the energy that it takes, the work that it takes to move those mountains upwards. The massive amount of land and basically rock, etc., in the mountains, to lift that up takes work. It takes a force times a distance. And where is this magical force coming from? It's just absolutely absurd that somehow these, if you look at the top of mountains, which I've been to many, you look and you see seashells. You see layering in the very top of the mountains that was created very deep under the ocean. So these were upthrust by 10, 20, in some cases 30,000 feet. To imagine that some kind of slow-moving force just kind of lifted all of this by plates moving sideways is ludicrous. The physics does not add up. Okay, so anyway, but the point is that the mountain building occurs once again when large objects come by Earth and sets up a gravitational wave in the surface of the Earth. When those waves come along and hit an existing obstruction, which would be the mountain ranges. This is why, for example, in the Colorado Rocky Mountains, you find, and down into the American Southwest, you find about 20 different epochs of mountain building that occurred during the Earth's history, and at least what we can see of the Earth's history by looking at the surface now. And so five mass extinctions, 20 periods of mountain building, each one of these related to a large celestial object. Let me rephrase this. Each one of these related to the passage of some celestial object. And now this is not the same one. In most cases, it would be a different one, not some. In this, of course, we get into the goofiness that happened during the Planet X era, which, thank God, it's passed. That all of that silliness that came along with Planet X, that I spent most of my time for years, if not decades, telling people that the Planet X story was phony and that there are Planet X objects, but there's many, many of them, number one, and they appear as large comets, not some big orange ball up in the sky. So anyway, the end result is that we have five mass extinctions, a sixth one that when we count the Holocene mass extinction, and then the 20 periods of mountain buildings, all of these related to some, each one of them relative to a specific large object coming by of which we have no history. And like I say, be very clear that each one of these events was probably due to some object completely unrelated to the other ones. In other words, these were 20 mountain building episodes created by 20 separate large objects that came by Earth. And so those things are out there. They potentially would come back. But remember that this is another one of the phony baloney aspects of the Planet X hoax stories, is that it comes back every periodically and affects Earth each time. Well, that's not the way things work. Okay, so how many times has Earth potentially had pole shifts? Because if you have enough activity to create mountains, you have enough activity to create pole shifts. So there potentially were major ones and then some minor ones where the Earth maybe just changed its precessional rate just a little bit. Something like that, which would be, in the technical sense, a pole shift, because the precession rate is related to the poles, the basically precession of the poles. Okay, so that's one question. And then there was a second question from this listener, which I will read. Please tell us if you have been trying to resolve all the differences, different discrepancies within the general theory of relativity. We would all be fascinated to know if you study this every day or whether all of your studies revolve around this. We'd just like to know how you would phrase it or describe it. Okay, well, first of all, I'll say that the special theory of relativity has been well proven in the laboratory, in outer space, etc. And general relativity is basically false. The idea that gravity affects light. This is the central core issue of the general theory of relativity. Now, there are some aspects of general relativity which are very good in the idea of the time, the warp time-space continuum, which means that, say you're an alien, you're coming into our solar system on a spacecraft, and you don't have any propulsion going on at the time, then what you're following is not a straight line. If you're way out in outer space, way away from anything, you're pretty much moving in a straight line. But as soon as you come into the solar system, you're moving along the space-time continuum lines. In other words, the gravity, the lines of free fall, basically, as you move through the solar system. So even though you are being tugged on by the various planets and you're moving in a curved path, you are literally weightless. That's your straight line. Looking from a distance is actually a curved line. So all of that and the tensor analysis and the relation of this to special relativity is all good. The problem with general relativity comes in with what is known as the principle of equivalence, or the famous Elevator-Gedanken thought theorem, which allegedly was proven but was not. With the Eddington experiment looking at bending of light around stars, the idea of general relativity there is that light also therefore would follow the space-time continuum, and when it comes into a solar system would follow the same path as a gravitational physical object. And that is the part that's wrong, because the and Einstein recognized this in his book Out of My Later Years. It's his autobiography, Einstein's autobiography, on page 105 in the book, the version I saw. At any rate, that was the one that was in the stacks at Cornell University. Out of My Later Years by Albert Einstein. He talks about general relativity and his doubts about it because it did not contain the total field, which includes electric and magnetic fields. So his query was, how could general relativity or gravity affect light to bend it, to redshift it, if there was no known mechanism for light to be affected by electricity and magnetism, the other two forces? And so that was his quandary, and that's why he was very interested in Velikovsky's work, because Velikovsky was bird-dogging the idea that there was electrical things going on in outer space, which turned out to be true. That's what I, all my work discovers, that entire body of understanding that Einstein never got to. Einstein never had data from outer space, did not have space probes, didn't have any basis for understanding things like the solar wind. Remember, Einstein died, 1954, before all of the space race, before all the data, etc. And so at any rate, general relativity has a lot of good information. The curvature of space around massive objects, etc. Does that mean that there are black holes? No, it does not. If you just follow general relativity, the reason you get black holes is because of the singularities in the space-time continuum. The question is, can matter actually compress down to relatively small singularity is what is its, it would be called in mathematics. A singularity is a zero point where that blows up and goes through the values of, for example, the gravitational pull, the field lines, etc., go to infinity, and that's essentially a black hole. But if you take away, that's the combination of general relativity, the concept of curved space-time, with special relativity. And the question is, does that correspond to reality? And maybe it does, maybe it does not. But the idea that what we observe in outer space, and this is fundamental to understanding these recent people saying, well, we found pictures of black holes. No, along with that has to go a lot of data, redshifted data, etc., and understanding the profile of redshifts as you get down closer to the alleged black hole. And none of that appeared. These people that put up a picture of a black hole, it was ludicrous, because they didn't really have any of the associated data that would have to go with it. Okay, so I talk a lot about this on my DVD number 4, my Astronomy, Astrophysics, Space Science University Level course. It's a downloadable DVD in my my webpage. That's where I go into this topic in a lot of great detail. So if you're interested in a real explanation of this with a lot of detail, that's where you got to go for more information. Okay, so I'll have some more listener queries here in a minute, but I started a GoFundMe campaign, and it is called Education. I'll pull it up here in a minute and give you the full title. But the reason I did this, it's to raise money to provide education to governmental units on the state, local, and federal level, to provide education for people. And all of this takes time and money, of which I don't have very much of either. And so that's the whole point. The whole issue with water is that there is tremendous amount of disinformation out there, and it's really, really bad. So, I mean, I had my water filter company for a period of, what, now almost 20 years. Water is something I happen to know a bit about. Water filtration, reverse osmosis, distilled water, sea water, brackish water, you name it, frozen water, unfrozen water, hydrological cycles, weather, water in the atmosphere. I was one of the two finalists in the XPRIZE dealing with the water in the atmosphere issues. You know, this is something I happen to know a lot about. And so what I want to do is take some of this knowledge and package it so I can give it off to municipalities. Just an example, a practical example. Municipalities are, some of them are testing, some of them are faking the test, just writing stuff down and putting it in a file and not doing the tests at all. But there are so-called federal standards for water that would, they have very, very few contaminants that they actually have to test for. And it's just a like a rigged system. And so the municipalities say, well, we're trusting to federal standards. Well, it's just baloney. They have no idea what's in their water. Or you take a place like Flint, Michigan, where they changed over the water supply. They didn't tell anybody. People are drinking carcinogenic water right out of the Flint River. And then to remedy the situation, the city comes out and hands out these little screw-on faucet filters that don't do anything. I mean, it's just one bad thing after the other. So the reason I started this GoFundMe campaign is to educate the public and the people in government offices. And like I say, I don't have the time and the money, but if I get enough funding, then I'll be able to justify spending some time on that critical issue. So anyway, here's the address to go to. Just go to GoFundMe, and I'll have a link on my webpage, by the way. There'll be a link up at the very top. But it's just go to GoFundMe, and it's Water Filtration for Cities, Towns, and Country. That's basically the title of the GoFundMe effort. It's Water Filtration for Cities, Towns, and Country. So anyway, something very necessary. There's so much misinformation about water out there. Okay, this is an interesting fact. Antifa, you've heard that over and over again on the evening news. Supposedly says anti-fascism. Well, what Antifa really means is its costumes, literally with masks. And as part of the costume is a mask that you put on to cover your face. And so Antifa is not anti-fascism. It's literally costumes, something dressed up, pretending it's something it's not. And, of course, that's the George Soros-funded activity that is attempting to destroy the United States. If you want to go into space, I don't know if I would advise this, but NASA will sell you a ticket for $50 million to go up to the International Space Station, something that they would not do before. Remember what Dan Golden's actual words were, over my dead body, when the guy was, what was his name, Titus? was the guy's businessman's name, and he had bought a ticket to go up to the space station through Russia. And he had attempted to do this through NASA, and they said no. And remember that John Denver tried to become the first civilian astronaut in outer space, and NASA said no. They picked, Christy McCullough from the teacher program. And we all know what happened there. But anyway, now you can go up to space if you want, $50 million. That's just for the plane ride up there. And they allegedly are going to send you on a space rocket that would be built by SpaceX or by Boeing, one of the two. I don't think you get to pick which one. But then it's $35,000 a night for your room and board up at the space station. So if you have an extra $50 million sitting around and $35,000 a night, then you could go to space. The only problem is that nobody has ever flown on either the Falcon Dragon spacecraft for humans, designed for humans, nor has anybody ever flown on the Boeing system or the Boeing rockets or even the Falcon rockets. They have never carried a human payload. So you'd be the first one. Go for it, buddy. Oh, my goodness. Anyway, here's an interesting email that came in from a fan. It said, is green energy the next bank in that they would be too large to fail? Too big to fail. Remember the banks? They were too big to fail, so we had to bail them out. This was during the mortgage crisis. You had 17 million houses going into foreclosure in the United States all at the same time because of the housing disaster, brought to you by none other than Barack Obama. Yep, right in the middle of his term as president, we had the great foreclosure housing crisis, which did not happen to have to happen at all. What they did, the ding-dong Obama, the idiot, basically deregulated loan applications for houses. So they went, and I knew people who were writing 20, 30 loans a day, making $1,000 a loan. They were making big money on a daily basis, writing out loans for people that could not possibly afford a house. They just, yeah, you want a house? We'll sign you up here. We got just as good as gold. And those people would go into those houses, and they couldn't even make the first payment. So within months, there was a massive foreclosure rate. And of course, it's hard to sell your house when the house next door is in foreclosure for half the price. So anyway, that was the thing that ticked off the big foreclosure deal back in the, 2010, 11, 12, in that time frame. But anyway, the point was that when the banks then failed due to that, the government came in and bailed them out. And instead of bailing out the house owners, they bailed out the banks. So the banks, first of all, got all the foreclosed property and then got paid the equivalent amount of value for the houses that they stole from the people. Anyway, the term arose too big to fail. The banks were too big to fail, and we all had to help them out. Now, the question is from this listener, and I think it's a really good, insightful question, is green energy, in other words, these bogus companies like General Electric, which is failing, Siemens, which is failing, Vesta, which is holding on by the skin of its the skin of its teeth, and a lot of other companies have already gone under because government subsidies have ceased for the so-called alternative energy industry. The solar industry would not exist without subsidies that they're paying for solar panels that don't work, that have marginal value. Okay, but anyway, the question arises, could the green industry be too big to fail? In other words, do you have to keep paying these industries? And the answer is yes, it's already happening. The Congress right now is querying about the quandary over the idea of continuing subsidies for the so-called alternative energy industry. And they said 5 years ago, oh, no, just give us subsidies for 5 years. At that point, the prices will come down. The public will take over and pay for everything. Well, their whole business model was built on subsidies, and they can't exist without them. They're, 40% or in some cases 100% of everything is being paid by you, the taxpayer. So in a sense, it's already at the point of too big to fail. And of course, senators and congressmen and local politicians, etc., are too stupid to understand anything scientific about the fact that the entire alternative energy industry was a ruse from the very beginning. I talk about that in my book, The McCanny Wing Generator World Energy Project, with an addendum, The Myth of Alternative Energy. That's where I talk about the myth that somehow alternative energy was going to save us. It never was. It was never meant to. It was always meant to, when it has soaked up all of the money out of the alternative energy industry, and this whole idea of the New Green Deal, where we're supposed to invest trillions of dollars into so-called alternative energy, is just another boondoggle which will fail. And after then General Electric comes along and says, well, doggone, we got to go back to nuclear power, their main core business. Isn't that a swell deal? And nobody, here's one of the main points, nobody is monitoring what these alternative energy systems are putting out on a daily, weekly, monthly basis. Have they met the promises? When you see in the newspaper, 100,000 houses will be lit with some solar panel assembly array or whatever, or three-blade wind turbines, have these performed up to their nameplate expectations? And in all cases, the answer is no. Okay, just throw in a bit of comment here on my wing generator. Yes, that's progressing. And it's very difficult to follow a bad act. It's like a bad vaudeville act, and you're the vaudeville act that follows it. It was a terrible act that came before you, and now you've got to come out and convince people that, hey, this whole thing was a sham, and you have a product that really works. Anyway, just a quick comment on the term green. When this started happening, a good 10 years ago, I saw that everybody was going to become green. You know, the router that you buy is going to be green. It says uses less energy, therefore it's green. And this term green became the sexy new word. If your product was green, then it should sell more. And so this worked. Of course, politicians would never let a good thing lie without using it to death. So the New Green Deal is hardly a surprise that politicians have not picked up on this as some kind of fantastic thing that's going to save the planet. Well, it's a political tool, and here's the problem, though. It's packed with emotion, and this is something we're seeing more and more of these days, is science and so-called science facts, which is not science fact at all, being sold by emotion. People get all riled up, and, oh, they got to do all this stuff, I'm pretty much a tree hugger myself, but I'm not one of the insane ones that, follows every, I'm not a groupie for every fad that comes along that's green or you're tree huggerish. The tree huggers have been some of the most manipulated people on the planet, and that's not ending anytime soon. Unfortunately, they're telling young kids today that the world is going to end in 12 years, that they don't have a future unless we all bow to this New Green Deal baloney. And the actual answer is that it's a political tool that's being used for manipulation. When I was a kid, just to give you an example, they told me I had to go to the Vietnam War. Well, I told them I wasn't going, and I didn't. They told us when we were little kids in grade school that we had to all get under our desk because at any moment the Russians were going to bomb us into smithereens, those terrible Russians. It's, gee, things have not changed much. But anyway, so we all had to get under our desks because on a given moment, you know, the city nearby, 50 miles away, could be blown off the face of the map by the Russians with nuclear bombs. And then 2 days later, all of the food would be irradiated, and then we'd all have these long, extenuated death periods until everybody died. That's what they told us when we were little kids. And, you know, to create fear of the Russians so that we all grew up to be good little soldiers. Well, anyway, they're doing it again. It's just a little twist on it's a new twist on the same old tale. Here's a note on, there's something called SSL, Secure Socket Layer. And when you go to a web page, it's got that little lock up on the side, which tells you that it's secure, supposedly. And then there's another system like this. It's called Transport Layer Security, or TLS. And these are mechanisms that are supposedly designed to protect you during your login periods, or if you're doing transactions, say, with a bank or something like that. But the reality is there's nothing safe about these. These do not protect you. They do not provide any layer of security. It's all baloney. And what they're doing is they're conning unsuspecting. I'm a knowledgeable IT user of the internet and of computers. But if you don't have it, it's the old protection racket. If you don't have it, nobody's going to go to your site. There's going to be this big thing flashes up on your screen. Danger, don't go to this site. Go at your own risk. Do not buy anything from this site. So it's the old protection racket with a new wrap around it. And do you think that these companies go to your site to see if it's safe or not? No. They don't do anything. They just collect the money. And it's about $125 a year to get an SSL certificate. It does not mean anything, but it just people are scared of this. When they see that big red sign come up, don't go to this web page. It doesn't have our super protection racket stamp of approval. Anyway, there are people out there trying to fight this and bring class action lawsuits, but it's difficult because computer security is a big issue. And, of course, in government and in the courtroom, it's very difficult because judges and politicians don't understand the intricacies of IT and computers and internet, etc. So anyway, I'm going to jump back now. I was talking about the NASA $50 million go to the space station thing. There's a program called Living with a Star. Now, this started decades ago with NASA, and the whole idea was, how the heck do we get around in outer space? And the main issue was radiation in outer space, of which NASA has no clue. But anyway, this whole Living with a Star program, I just got a thing that came in with the American Geophysical Union meeting, and these people have spent 20 years going around, having meetings, talking, writing reports. And it's all baloney. It's all pure baloney. These people have done nothing as far as advancing the human species getting into outer space and protecting it against radiation, which is the big issue in outer space. A quick note here. Popocatepetl, Mexico City, east of Mexico City, there's two big volcanoes. Popo in Iztaccíhuatl, and every morning when I lived in Mexico City, I would wake up and I'd look out my window across the east to the rising sun, and there was the two mountains, Popo and Isla. And Popo, this last couple weeks, has been spouting off, to say the least, blowing its top. And of course, the trade winds come in from the east, so if these volcanoes really go off in a serious way, it could affect Mexico City, very large population, one of the largest population centers in the world, literally. But anyway, something to keep attuned to. There's also another volcano in the Kamchatka Peninsula region of Russia that is waking up. It had been dormant for a long time. It's had over 2,000 earthquakes below it, the Udine chain. And it could go active. They say at any time. They don't know. It's very difficult to predict. But at any rate, if you're going to Mexico City, you might go there for a very interesting, something interesting besides just visiting the city. Here's something that popped up. Trump made a quote. He did one of his famous tweets. And he said, oh, the moon is part of Mars. And I read the quote, and it's very clear what he's saying, that the moon program, in terms of the government, is part of the Mars program. It's all one program. That's what he was saying. But people are going, oh, Trump said the moon is part of Mars. No, no, no. I think he knows that the moon and Mars are different things, different places. You know, moon is around us, Mars is out there. At least he knows that much. No, but what he was referring to, if you read it, and it's very clear, is one of the quirks of the English language, if you don't put in all of the pronouns and adjectives and everything. But he was saying that the moon program and the Mars program, in terms of what NASA is doing, are all the same program. Okay. Just a quick mention here. My paid casts, in May, I wrapped up my 61 lectures. That's 61 weeks worth of lectures discussing my books, CDs, DVDs, e-DVDs, e-books, the calendar, sun, star, clock, posters, etc. And I spent a lot of time on that, 61 weeks, because there's a lot of material there. And I did this for the homeschooling people, or the also people who just want education outside of the baloney that they give you if you go to any standard university or grade school, K-12, whatever. But anyway, right now I'm starting 100 programs, so this is going to last literally 2 years into the future on education. So these will be actual education shows, 1 hour per week, educating the public, going from preschool, K-12, university, graduate school. And I've already got a lot done with respect to this, with my work that I've already presented. But these 100 programs over the next 2 years are going to get us back to real education. And when I talk about science, I don't say, well, you got to believe me, I got a degree, and, you know, puff my chest up, and, you know, you have to believe me, everything that Jim McCanney says. No, I don't present like that. That's the Carl Sagan method, that they're smart, you're dumb. They tell you, you know, the Danny DeVito with that, what is it, Melissa, what was that movie, the little girl? It was real smart, and Danny DeVito was the dad, and he was always treating her like, you know, like she was inferior. Well, that's the NASA attitude, the Danny DeVito attitude towards you, that they're smart, you're dumb, they're big, you're small, and you better just listen to them. That's not what I do. I explain things in very plain English so that you can understand it. And then the other thing you can understand is, gee, how come those guys with PhDs don't seem to get this? But anyway, my next 100 shows of the paid cast, $3.95 per month, which is less than a cup of coffee. And so that's, you know, if you divide that by 4 or 5 weeks, that's less than a dollar per show. And so, and that helps me out. It helps support, because this show is commercial free. And, you know, it's a way of me getting money, because I don't have those government grants. I don't have a $21.5 billion annual budget from the government like NASA does. Okay, so anyway, my next 100 shows are going to be on education of the public and the kids, etc. So we've got to start getting our kids back from this horrifically bad educational system that they're stuck in. Very important topic. Go to my webpage, jmccsci.com, and sign up for the paid casts. And by the way, if you go to the top of my webpage, second link there goes to the topics of my paid casts. I started these in August, actually late July of 16. That's how long I've been doing these paid cast shows. So there's hundreds and hundreds of paid casts. And remember, I did the Tesla, the lectures on Tesla, the lectures on the Colburn. I did a 20-part series picking apart the Cosmos series of Carl Sagan and DeGrasse Tyson, picking that apart piece by piece and showing you what a complete fabrication of just Looney Tunes science, and how there's really nothing there. There's no there in science. It's just a bunch of unrelated so-called science facts. And so what I'm going to do now, however, is just start with lectures on mathematics and science, so that we can finally get back to real information on how the world works, how the universe works, and get away from this atheist science that's been pounded down the public's throat for the last decades and decades. Also, I'll be talking about the history of the educational system and show you how we got to this deplorable state that we're in right now. How did we get here? What happened? What went wrong? And then how do we move forward, and how do you teach kids? And it's something I have a lot of experience with. I spent a lot of time, half of my career in education, not a full half, but a good 10 years in education. And what I realized is how to teach kids, how to teach youth, and how to teach university level people. How do you teach them? What do? How do you inspire them? How do you also give them correct information? And kids are really smart. I feel sorry for kids today. They're stuck in this classroom. From the time they're in kindergarten, they got to sit at a desk and listen to some tripe that's coming out of the, you know, somebody's mouth that is reading out of a textbook. Oh my goodness, boring out of your mind. What, I mean, how can you do this to kids? I would not imagine taking a kid and making them sit there for 20 years and take notes and then regurgitate it all back, and that's an A? Oh my God. Oh my goodness. That's education. The education is so bizarre. The Greeks had the right idea, the complete person. The complete person, the person that was educated physically, spiritually, and was able to defend themselves against attacks. Rigorous debate was part of something they grew up with, to defend themselves and defend their position, and logic and natural law. Natural law, nobody even talks about that. What's natural law? Natural law is basically common sense. That's another term for it. But it's all of that information that's written into your being as part of a human being, that you have a right to defend yourself. Yes, you do. You have a kick-ass right to defend yourself, and that's the end of the story. There ain't no debate about it. Simple as that. But you don't go around harassing other people. You know, it's just the things that are going on today are so ridiculous. People are trying to con you out of your human rights. Natural law is very basic, and every person understands this, and that's why, for example, when Trump came along, I didn't agree with everything he said, but he's a disruptor. He disrupted that system that had been put in place to drag you, the population, down to third world country status. That's the way they work in third world countries. Some guy gets in charge. He's got power. He's got the money behind him, the international bankers, and everybody else gets to eat dirt. That's the formula for a third world country, and that's what they were doing to the United States until this Trump guy came along and changed things around. And there's still a lot of people that, you know, that don't understand that their rights and their kids' rights and their future were being totally obliterated. Okay, so anyway, but I'm not going to be teaching political science or anything like that. What I'm going to be teaching is science and mathematics, real science and real mathematics. And let's just take, for example, evolution. Evolution is taught as science fact today, But the problem is there's no evidence for it. Science requires experimental evidence. That's the scientific method. You make a proposal, you go test it, and then you look for experimental results. And those experimental results are what rule the day. Well, that's not at all what's going on with evolution. Something else is going on. There's some process going on. It is not evolution. It's not random. It's not something that just happened out of a rabbit's hat one day. No, there's something very particular going on. And it's okay. Here's the other thing about science. I mean, I have a lot of things I've discovered that are very nailed down and true. The plasma discharge comet model, the surface fusion of the sun, that tornadoes and hurricanes and cyclones are caused by electrical currents from the ionosphere. These are very, very well proven, and you can go out and understand these and prove them for yourself. You don't have to believe me because I got a badge of some kind, because I went to a university and got a stamp on my forehead. No, you believe me because you can go out and you can see it yourself and go, yeah, he's right. This is what's going on here. I see it for myself. That's what science is. It's not a bunch of unrelated facts that you read it in a textbook. But let's get back to evolution. Evolution does not explain what we see. It does not explain at all what we see in the world of animals and plants and the universe and in people. You know, none of this is explained by evolution. Evolution is something that I don't even like the word, because we can use, for example, we could talk about the evolution of clothing and how it went from the loincloth to the, you know, to the animal skin to fine Armani shoes and, you know, silk suits. You know, that's an evolution. That's an evolution of progress in a, say, manufacturing process, et cetera, making clothes. So there's a term where evolution, it's a clear chain of events. But you can also trace these, all of these things, one mini step at a time, all the way through history, all the way up to where we are today in the clothing industry. You cannot do that in the animal or the plant industry. In analyzing plants and animals. There are always big gaps. And the other issue is that if evolution were true, then the progress is always in the direction of more complex things. That is not the way statistical systems work. I happen to be an expert in statistical analysis, probability, and statistics as much as any expert on the planet. Statistical systems don't work that way. They don't always progress in the nice direction. They don't. They simply don't. So, if you're somebody that believes in evolution, and I've talked about this on my show before, what makes an organic molecule organic? Well, the standard definition, a chemist would come back immediately and say, well, those are the molecules that are the basis of human life. Yeah, but why are they different than the iron molecule over there, or the iron oxide molecule, or the carbon structure that makes a diamond, which is inorganic? What's the difference between that carbon atom and the carbon atom that's in a organic molecule chain? What's the difference? They can't tell you. Why? Because they don't know. Because there is no explanation. Why is that carbon atom when it's in a diamond inorganic, and why is that carbon atom when it's in a carbon-hydrogen protein chain organic? They can't tell you. Because there's something else going on. Evolution is not the story. We see many changes. We see adaption. We see crossing. Let's take dogs. You know, take this dog, the type, and you cross it with that one, or you take this tomato and you cross it with other ones, and you get these certain type of tomato. Okay, that's not evolution. That is not evolution, okay? That is not creating new species out of other ones. So there's some big, big, big problems with this concept of evolution, but it's just taught as if, yeah, we had monkeys, now we got people. Hey, what's the problem? The problem is there's about, 20 million years of missing links going on here. And they literally say that. They said that's the missing link. Okay, let's go to mathematics. And this is something, one of my pet peeves. Mathematics is very simple. But you have to have time to sit down and do math problems. And it's like a chain. If you have a missing link in the chain, you lose the ability to hold everything together. That missing link is like important. And so in mathematics, you have to build from one to the next to the next to the next. And the other thing is to understand mathematics. You don't have to have everybody understanding all of the lemmas and theorems and corollaries of, say, advanced engineering calculus. You could understand a lot about that without understanding all the details. So there's various levels of understanding mathematics. And that's something that has never been done. And so kids go along, or people or professionals, you have people, for example, meteorologists or chemists or physical biologists or evolutionary biologists or, geologists. Those are just some categories of people who did not study very far in physics. Physics is somewhat the basic science, in a sense, the mother of all sciences, because it's how things work. You know, you take a ball, roll it down a hill. How do you explain that with equations, etc.? Okay, so physics, pure physics, separate that out from astrophysics, which is a zoo of unrelated theories that don't, most of them, which don't work. Look at basic fundamental physics, laboratory physics, and it's very solid. It's very sound. Chemistry the same way. But when you get out into why does the space shuttle glow, you have to understand the real reasons why the space shuttle glows. It's because it's an electrical phenomena in outer space. Once you get to that level, that's where science, standard science, just crumbles under its own weight of ridiculousness and history of bad science and dragging along albatrosses that don't make any sense. So this is the kind of thing that I have to sort out in my educational program to get you to where you understand. And like one of my fans said, his kid was going off to college and he was giving him a little bit of advice. And he said, okay, when you go to college and you study science, you're going to have to answer the questions on the test to get an A, but then you're going to have to study mechanics stuff so you know what's really going on. That's exactly correct, because about 95% of what they're going to teach you in college in science, after you get through the pure chemistry and the pure science and the pure biology, the things that are very sound, it's off into never, never land. And that's where you have to understand where the differences are fundamentally. Understanding science and mathematics. So anyway, that's what I want to do. And I want to bring kids back to understanding real science. And the other thing is, I'll be very clear about something. Schools spend far too much time on teaching and in the classroom, etc. They labor over concepts. And sure, things get complicated. Once you get into physics, advanced physics, mathematics, things get complicated. You have to spend time on these subjects. But too many times, people are spending a lot of time on frivolous things that don't amount to a hill of beans, and in 5 years will probably change. But in general, far too much time is spent on teaching topics. I'll just go back to a good example. When I was at Cornell, I took over, a teacher was had to leave, one of the other teachers in the calculus group that were teaching student calculus, undergraduate calculus. So I took over his class, and I came into the classroom, and I says, okay, here's the lesson, here's where we are. I go up to the blackboard, and I start writing and start talking and turn around and look at the students. And I was not a minute, I was not 2 minutes into the lecture, and this student screams out from about the 20th row up, like 395 kids in the classroom. And he says, what's a limit? I said, what do you mean, what's a limit? I said, that's stuff you should have learned long ago in here. He said, we haven't learned anything. This guy comes into the room, writes on the board, never looks at us, gets done, walks out of the room, and we don't know anything. And I'm going, oh my God. This is Cornell University, calculus class. And my jaw dropped. I mean, how could you not know these basic things? So I came around to the front of the desk, and I looked up, and these students started talking to me. He says, yeah, we don't know anything going on here. And I thought, oh my goodness, how could this be? So I sat down on the desk, and I went through the first month and a half of lessons of the calculus class, talking with my hands and talking to the students in explaining what limits, a limit from the right, a limit from the left, you know, on and on, Cauchy's theorems, on and on. And in one class, I brought them up a month and a half worth of material to where we were at that point. And they were just like, couldn't believe it. Somebody actually came in the classroom and taught them. So anyway, I know how to teach people. I know how to bring the subject to the people. I know what you have to know, and I don't fill it in with a lot of air, a lot of foam, with a lot of air bubbles in the middle. No, you can understand a lot of this, and the idea is that my course, my paid cast, is going to be something that will be the basis of education for the next 100, 200, 300 years. Because you're not going to get it in K-12, university, whatever, or preschool. And it's very important also for parents to understand with preschool kids that they have to start learning. They start learning very young. Kids are just a sponge for information. So anyway, go to my webpage. That's beginning. And also, I did, like I say, the last 61 lectures are on my books and posters, DVDs, etc. I'm about out of time here. Just remember, go to the webpage. The water filter's on sale. The best water filters on the planet, like everything else on my page. This is jmccsci.com. This is James McCanney. This is my Science Hour. And as always, we are at the crossroads. Good night.